Welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Daniela Walls, National Chair of the Tax Wall Street Party. I am here with Michael Chiotinis, reporting from Athens. Happy end of National Infrastructure Week. We'll get to why that's important later in the show. We are recording this program on the afternoon of the 16th of May, 2015. Webster Tarpley is out changing world history in the Donetsk People's Republic, the DPR for short, and we'll be back next week with a full report. Tonight, he traveled from Donetsk to St. Petersburg for the 15th Likhachev Scientific Conference, the world's largest scholarly, cultural, current affairs meeting in St. Petersburg, Russia, with 220 papers from 30 countries. Tonight is the state reception for the Likhachev Conference. You can read Webster's Likhachev paper, his speech that he will present to the scholars and heads of state tonight at www, and I'm going to spell this because it's not spelled like Likhachev, it's spelled differently. It's www.lihachev.ru, lihachev.ru. So, and I have to say, after reading his speech myself, this is one of the all-time great speeches. It's worth the time to sit down with it. Michael, are you there with us?
Yes, I'm here. We should also, I think, say that listeners can follow his live tweets every day from his Twitter feed at Webster G. Tarpley and retweet. Of course. You can check his Twitter now and see him with the Foreign Minister Alexander Kaufman of the Donetsk People's Republic, representing the Tax Wall Street Party.
Yes, that's an important point. Thank you. He's keeping up with the live tweets at Webster G. Tarpley, and please retweet. Brandon Turbeville this week wrote a good piece for Activist Post entitled, "Why Do Bankers Wage War to Stop National Banks?" You can find this article on both our United Front Against Austerity and Tax Wall Street Party Facebook pages. If you haven't followed us yet, then please come find us there. The article is also on activistpost.com. Why do bankers wage war to stop national banks? This article ties into why it's important that Webster's in Donetsk now, and the UFAA, Tax Wall Street Party, has a representative there. This is a fledgling republic in East Ukraine. It's good to take out a map and see where the DPR is. In the east of Ukraine, this republic has succeeded in doing what's long overdue for us here in America, which is to nationalize their out-of-control banks and put them to use for the people. DPR doesn't have a central bank like we have the Fed, because the nearest central bank is in Kiev. But the DPR is, the DPR is a breakaway bloc. It nevertheless had a bunch of big banks that were parasitizing the people and did nothing to improve the place. Didn't help with infrastructure or living standards, just parasites, as banks tend to be.
Yeah, the Donetsk People's Republic is in the stages of putting together a formal government. And we have Webster Tarpley there to advise in their fledgling stages.
Yeah. This is the UFAA and Tax Wall Street Party and Webster changing world history. They've broken away from the Kiev Central Bank and nationalized their private banks. So this is why Brandon points out that NATO's ire is directed at the DPR. Now, Brandon Turbeville suggests that if we suggest that the ire is not only from the oligarchs that controlled the newly nationalized banks, but also the Anglo-American banking cartel that essentially owns the U.S. and NATO countries.
Roger Annis at Counterpunch writes, right, "A nation banking system has been established in the two republics by nationalizing the banks of the billionaire bankers, notably the private bank of the rightist oligarch Igor Kolomoisky."
Yeah, from the right, the rightist, richest and rightist. Who is Kolomoisky? we should get into that. He's one of the richest men in Ukraine, and he's also been a fervent supporter and contributor to the Euromaidan color revolution cause, as well as the current fascist and neo-Nazi government operating from Kiev, along with Western support.
Kolomoisky was even appointed governor of Dnipropetrovsk.
Good job. I was hoping to get out of the Russian pronunciation today. That was great.
I hope that's correct. Dnipropetrovsk. I will try to govern for you on that, Daniela. as I was saying, he was appointed by the fascist Ukrainian government. Having been nationalized, these banks are now apparently going to be used for investment in infrastructure for the people of the DPR. Webster is going to give us a rundown next Friday of exactly how this is taking shape. And you can read examples of this on his Twitter.
Mm-hmm. This infrastructure is expected to be used for roads and sanitation and other public services, but also for the purposes of industrial infrastructure and transportation. And this will hopefully be a breath of fresh air and an example to the rest of the world, at least in the area of the potential for progress and development by use of a nationalized banking system as opposed to private banking alone, and certainly compared to a privatized central bank like the Federal Reserve.
Well, one thing is for certain. It will become a beacon for the Anglo-American war machine, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it is already, and this is a big point of Turbeville's article.
Yes, this is evidenced by American military involvement and targeting of virtually every other nation across the world without a privatized central bank. It is clear why NATO and the U.S. has stepped up its attempts to destroy the new republic before it even has a chance to take root. There is no mistake that the United States has increased its moves to support the Kiev government in overtaking the DPR. Indeed, providing political cover for fascist forces attempting to destroy the DPR, misrepresenting ceasefire violations as the fault of the separatists, and the arming and training of the Kiev fascist forces have gradually increased over the last several months, I'm afraid.
And with the DPR's recent move, it's no doubt placed itself in the crosshairs of the Anglo-Americans and the war machine set out to destroy any signs of independence and the use of government and banking for the benefit of the people. We can only wish the best for the people of the DPR, but also be there to advise like we are and lend support, keep them on the right track, tell them they're doing the right thing, be supportive while attempting to stop U.S. involvement in their internal affairs at the same time.
Like the DPR's predecessors, who have had the foresight to nationalize or operate national banks. I'm speaking about places like Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Cuba, or Iran. The same way the DPR is now finding itself in the crosshairs of the NATO war machine, and Webster is there in the middle of the fighting.
Mm-hmm. Brandon... Yeah, he's right there in the middle of the fighting. Brandon Turbeville wrote another article that fits in with the article, Why Do Bankers Wage War to Stop National Banks? The complimentary article is titled, State-Owned Central Banks Are the Real Target for West Imperial Wars, where he explains the world banking cartel and the governments which they operate through. This is Daniela Walls with Michael Chiotinas. Before the break, I was talking about Brandon Turbeville's two articles that tie into why Webster Tarpley is in Donetsk. The articles are Why Do Bankers Wage War to Stop National Banks? The complementary article is titled State-Owned Central Banks Are the Real Target for West's Imperial Wars, where Turbeville explains the world banking cartel and the governments which they operate through are not only diametrically opposed to the practice of national banking, but they are willing to commit entire nations to wars and even to world wars to to establish hegemony across the globe. Many activists who became rightly angered by central bank domination, and that anger then gave rise to the movement End the Fed. But here's the truth. The truth is that the bankers do not so much fear the ending of the Fed as much as the nationalization of the Fed. That word nationalization has been propagandized to seem socialist. It's not. It just means we control our own central bank. And that is what I see now in the DPR in Donetsk. Michael?
Yes. We should take some time, probably, to explore why they're more afraid of nationalization.
Okay. Let's tackle this. Okay. Well, the periods where we had nationalized banking created stability. When our national banks were dissolved back to private, that's when you had the booms and the busts again. The purpose of the Fed is to get reindustrialization, economic modernization, full employment, and rising standards of living for all the people. Contrary to monetarist fetishes, the value and soundness of currency in the modern world are determined by the ability of our national economy to produce physical commodities that the rest of the world wants to buy. I'll keep going for a second. Alexander Hamilton created the first bank of the United States, without which, you know, the new nation would have collapsed into poverty and chaos and returned to British monetarist rule. The second BUS, or Bank of the United States, it's called BUS, was created by James Madison, again to ward off this same chaos. Then Henry Clay coined the term that we use in our party, in our organization, the American system.
The American system.
Yeah. And it means, the definition is, a national bank, a protective tariff, and national infrastructure financed by the federal government. The rise of the U.S. as the world's greatest industrial power came thanks to this protective tariff and controlled currency, the greenbacks. So, and we can go all the way up to JFK, who tried to revive the New Deal and break the power of the Fed and was assassinated by those financiers, you know, with the help of the CIA.
So, let me tell you, the real enemies of economic progress are the Wall Street bankers, financiers, finance oligarchs, as we call them. If you let them control the government, the results are catastrophic. Not only because their activities are so far away from production, but because oligarchies are inherently uncoordinated. Usually they result in utter failure and chaos. We must fight to take government out of the hands of the bankers.
Yeah, and you've seen that firsthand in Greece, and we have to seize control of our Federal Reserve System and nationalize it as a bureau of the U.S. Treasury. A centerpiece of a recovery program would be the rebuilding and water systems, rebuilding of water systems, electrical grids, interstate highways, and rail systems, which is important for the state.
This, you know, Daniela, should lead us to the Amtrak crash.
Exactly.
Amtrak.
All right. You said it right. Amtrak.
Yeah. Yeah. Amtrak crash. Yeah. Governor Bruce Rauner proposed a state budget would cut, 40% from Illinois' funding for Amtrak trains during a time when ridership, as I was reading, has been climbing.
Yeah, 40%. It's huge while ridership's climbing. Rauner's budget proposes $26 million in spending for Amtrak, a cut of $16 million from the previous year's appropriation. And Amtrak spokesperson said the Rauner budget would likely lead to service reductions, like in Chicago.
In Chicago, in the state with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the world's largest derivatives market in the world, they want to save a few million by cutting train service.
Yeah, the CME, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, does 1,000 more derivatives trades every year than Wall Street. For every one derivative that Wall Street trades, 1,000 are traded at the CME. And they can't finance a train system that we found a way to build 100 years ago. we have a morning briefing at the Tax Wall Street Party. Our morning briefing from the other day is titled Austerity Kills. Post-industrial policies result in another deadly Amtrak train crash. To read this piece on rail or to sign up for our morning briefings, you can subscribe at taxwallstreetparty.org or at againstausterity.org. Lionel Media did a great piece on RT from our morning briefing and wrote a nice little message that our morning briefings are the most valuable thing for his research going. So he's doing several days a week now on RT covering our morning briefings, and I want to thank Lionel for that.
So the point is that third world funding will not yield a first world railroad. Isn't that right?
Right. Perfectly said. Exactly. Third world funding will not yield a first world railroad. Yes, exactly. The Amtrak, let's go through some of the facts here for a second. The Amtrak regional train derailment was on Tuesday and resulted in the death of a total of about 8 commuters, including, and then 200 injuries, including an acting dean of students at Medgar Evers College. And what we're saying is, does it take people dying to bring this into the national conversation and for Congress to get serious about railroads and infrastructure? This tragedy happened during National Infrastructure Week, as I mentioned above. This is the end of National Infrastructure Week. Well, ta-da. This is what we got. This tragedy should have provided impetus to thwart further rail austerity budgets, but the following afternoon, House GOP reactionaries voted down a plan to expand Amtrak's budget by $1 billion. Congresswoman Nita Lowey of New York highlighted the need to improve rail safety through increased investment. Lowey said the resulting bill drastically shortchanges job-creating investments critical to hardworking American families like roads, bridges, and rail systems, and access to safe and affordable housing. With the clarity provided by the prior evening's accident, only the most blind reactionary could ignore these facts. And no amount of deaths seems to deter these austerity goals.
These events can be avoided. That's the important thing. And the problem is failed economic policy.
Michael, that's the music. We'll see you guys on the other side. This is World Crisis Radio. Here with Michael Chiatinis, hosting from Athens. So, Michael, before the break, you were saying that this is the result of failed economic policy.
Yes, these things can be avoided. The problem is failed economic policies. They needed speed controls installed that they didn't have, and they needed funds to complete them. They were called positive train controls, or PTCs. No city closes their fire department because there hasn't been a recent fire, you know? Similarly, PTC and similar systems provide the safety backups needed to manage antiquated rail lines and for future high-speed rail networks.
Yeah, and I can say one thing. Both parties agree that the Northeast Corridor is the NEC is the sexy investment in the Amtrak system. It's the only division of Amtrak that turns a profit, yet the bulk of passengers are carried on Amfleet cars that were built in the mid-70s to the mid-80s by the forgotten Budco of Philadelphia. And they've performed incredibly, I mean, admirably for 35 years, but they're in dire need of replacement. The average speed of the NEC, the only high-speed corridor in the U.S., is 65 miles per hour. The average high speed of Chinese rail is 125 miles per hour.
Oh, my God. Gregory Edwards gave us some information here. Major bridges on the NEC have recently celebrated their 100th birthdays. If you don't believe it, an engineering feat, but in reality, their outdated infrastructure is leading to bottlenecks and forced speed restrictions. You know, 450 trains a day cross the 104-year-old Portal Bridge in New Jersey. Due to its age and condition, Its speed is limited to 60 miles per hour. A $900 million two-rack replacement bridge has been proposed, but no concrete funding has been found. Now, Amtrak's 105-year-old Hudson River tunnels into Penn Station are damaged and at max capacity. The Federal Reserve, the federal government has committed $3 billion for the access to the region's core project, adding two additional tunnels. New Jersey Transit, that's the NJT, invested $310 million in dual mode engines to provide one seat rides into Penn Station.
And reactionary Governor Chris Christie canceled the project mid-construction and diverted federal funds to backstop New Jersey budget holes. He was able to keep his campaign pledge to not raise taxes at the expense of modern infrastructure, but this left New Jersey with expensive trains and nowhere to run them. Amtrak has taken up the Hudson Tunnels project with the Gateway project, but funding for that's not been secured. In 2014, the U.S. budget, which was saddled by Republican austerity, spent $1.4 billion on Amtrak. Now, hear this. China spent $128 billion on high-speed rail infrastructure. So that means that China spends a staggering 130 times more, or just about 100 times more, than the U.S. on rail infrastructure.
China is committed to build the world's longest high-speed rail line from Beijing to Moscow. Total investment for the 4,300-mile journey is $250 billion. The largest Amtrak infrastructure investment was made in 1995. $1.7 billion was allocated to extend electrification from New Haven up to Boston. Results of this meager investment are an 80% market share between New York and Washington, and from 20% to 54% between New York and Boston. Many airlines have given up on the New York-Washington corridor altogether. What economic impact would an average speed of 125 miles per hour provide?
Oh, it would be incredible. I mean, China originally developed high-speed rail. This is interesting. I want to get into this for a second. China originally developed high-speed rail with overseas off-the-shelf technologies, but now it's developed its own domestic rail industry. The offshoot from these investments is a thriving high-speed rail capital goods export industry. Russia has signed a $390 million deal with the China Railway Group to build a Moscow-Kazan corridor. Another $10 billion is on the table for improved service on the Indian Railway. So we're in trouble here.
This isn't funny. Where the hell is the U.S.?
Right. Yeah. The Baltimore riots right now, a couple weeks ago, brought to the attention of America the lack of high-wage manufacturing jobs domestically, or that's at least what it should have brought to our attention. I mean, if black job lives matter, we need jobs. With 52% unemployment in Sandtown, Winchester, 52% unemployment, this is shocking. That shocked our friend, the host, Lionel. U.S. modern passenger rail cars rely on outside design and production, with U.S. workers basically they're relegated to the final assembly to meet the restrictions. So China protects its high-speed rail industry with high import tariffs, while the U.S. continues to suffer from free trade in the runaway shop. You see?
The stumbling block for many infrastructure advocates is funding.
Mm-hmm.
Advancing a 21st century high-speed rail system cannot come through deficit spending or some regressive tax like a gas tax. It's insane. Mm-hmm. America has a unique advantage stemming from its history of national banking. The Federal Reserve is currently the buyer of last resort and the issuer of credit. It issues credit, only functioning to aid Wall Street interests right now. Conservative estimates say financial institutions tap the Fed discount window to the tune of $27
trillion. Yeah.
With failing infrastructure and 92 million Americans out of work, it's time to demand the Federal Reserve provide a 0% century bonds for production. Modern infrastructure and 30 million jobs is only a yelling call away.
Yeah, that's funny, a yelling call away. Yeah, well, the general welfare's gone out the window. In Lincoln's time and in the tradition of Henry Carey, but in the tradition of Henry Carey, that I was talking about above, they drew from public works necessary, for the betterment of the general welfare, which eagerly funded and planned the United States, projects like canals, national highways, the transnational railroads were seen as ways to not only develop trade and the national economy, but to foster national unity and internal development, right? So immediate needs such as installing the safety precautions that could have prevented that crash on Tuesday could be covered by the money distributed to the states by a federally instituted Wall Street sales tax of 1% on derivatives between speculators. The problem here needs to be solved with a 1-2 punch. The UFAA program of 0% loans from the Fed and a Wall Street sales tax. We'll see you guys on the other side. For Dr. Webster Tarpley, who is in the People's Republic of Donetsk. During the break, Michael, you had a great question. Can you ask it?
Why can't America have great trains, Daniela?
I would say big government. Big government. I mean, it was the Republican mantra since right after World War II, American railroads have just slid into decline. And the Republicans are the loudest proponents of divesting in rail. Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, and Mitt Romney all acted as the fronts for the libertarian think tanks, determined to take down this so-called big government spending. And these shills stand in stark contrast to Abraham Lincoln and the Republicans of his day, who demanded federally funded daily mail service and the Transcontinental Railroad.
Daniela, all of your politicians and activists seem to be hitting the talking point, incoming inequality and wealth redistribution.
Yeah, they are this week. The new left coming onto the scene. And that's a big ball of yarn to unravel. So, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the issue of this wealth redistribution and income inequality. I mean, okay. Where do we start? So recently we had Bernie Sanders enter the presidential race, which is a good thing. And the Tax Wall Street Party has written to the effect that Bernie, we're afraid. I mean, here's our fear. We've written to the effect that Bernie is the left wingman for Hillary, and that's his job in this race. He has some good points. He has Medicare for All and some other good things, but he keeps hitting this wealth inequality. Webster calls him a catch basin to trap disaffected Democrats and ultimately swing them back to Hillary for the general election, meaning he ties up this vote that's against Hillary and sick of the Democrats, and then he throws them back to her at the last minute. But you were saying, okay, Bernie Sanders' mantra is wealth inequality and income inequality.
And yes. He says, I'm reading here, mm-hmm. There is, in my view, massive dissatisfaction in this country today with the corporate establishment and the greed of corporate America in an incredibly unequal distribution of wealth and income, which currently exists. That's what he's saying. And we have Bernie Sanders advocating the policies of Scandinavia, basically suggesting that if the United States would only follow Sweden or Denmark or Finland. And let's forget the fact that these are tiny countries. Okay, Sweden has a lower population than North Carolina. Really? That we could enjoy economic fairness and a robust social safety net just by doing this.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the mantra of the left right now, and that scares me. I mean, let's look at who else talks about income inequality. We have a list here.
Yes, our dear friend Russell Brand says he's in favor of a socialist egalitarian system based on the massive redistribution of wealth, heavy taxation of corporations, and massive responsibility for energy companies, any company exploiting the environment. Of course, that's a big thing. I think they should be taxed, he says. I think the very concept of profit should be hugely reduced. That's what he's saying.
This is all really scary as we unravel it. Okay, so here we go. Ed Miliband, the head of the British Labour Party, who recently lost the general election to David Cameron and the Conservatives, staked his campaign on tackling income inequality, same thing that Bernie's saying, and frequently spoke in admiration of the Scandinavian economies, same exact thing. And remember that Russell Brand, who supposedly doesn't vote, hosted Miliband on his podcast shortly before the election and endorsed him. If we judge by Brand and Miliband, we can assume that income inequality is the calling card of the left, backed by the Fabian socialists and Soros and on down the line. And indeed, that turns out to be the case. This idea is all over the New Statesman. It comes out of Oxfam, which is also the sponsor of the Robin Hood tax. And Bernie Sanders calls himself a democratic socialist. So,
yeah, we also had, let me tell you a funny thing here. You remember Papandreou was the first austerity prime minister who in his election campaign, the basic thing that he was saying was, let's be the Denmark of the South. So that's exactly the same thing. The point we need to make here is not that the idea of income inequality is untrue. Of course it's true. It's obvious. The point is that Bernie Sanders and the rest failed to identify the cause of that inequality. Is it the tax system? Is it corporate greed? Or is it something else? As listeners to Dr. Tarpley should know by now, if you want to distribute the pie more fairly, you first have to bake the pie. While the notional or dollar value of the world economy may have grown, the real value of the world economy, or at least the Western economy, has collapsed to the point where there is not enough to go around, no matter how fairly you distribute it.
I want to throw one thing in really quickly, that these Scandinavian societies are not perfect. They're incredibly Malthusian and controlled, and it's not necessarily the life you want because you're stuck in your place, and that's your place forever. But okay, let's bring Michael. How should I announce this here? We have Reverend Pinckney on. Michael, can we take a break for a moment?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, back to where we were. Reverend Pinckney.
Reverend Pinckney is here. How you doing?
Oh, Reverend Pinckney, I haven't spoken to you in weeks. I'm hosting for Webster again, who's traveling in Russia, giving a conference with world leaders and promoting your case. And I'm also co-hosting with Michael Chiatinas from Athens. So you have support around the world. And I'm sorry.
Well, I know Michael. Do I not know Michael? I know Michael.
No, Michael. Say hi, Michael.
Hi, hello.
Hey, how you doing, Michael? How you doing here? I'm at the Holiday Inn in Coldwater, Michigan. Most people call it the penitentiary, but I call it the Holiday Inn. But I tell you, the food is bad, but it's just one of those situations. I only got about 10 minutes to give you, so, it's a privilege to have you, Michael. And Danielle, it's an honor and a privilege to be on Webster's show. I just love this opportunity just to let the people know exactly what happened. And I do have great news to tell everybody. I got news that I'm excited about. and we're ready to take it to the very next level.
Tell us all about it, Reverend. Tell us everything we need to know.
Here's the great news. First of all, on the 14th, you know, they denied my motion for a new trial.
Yes.
And what they have done, they tried to hold up or delay me from getting the transcript. The judge has given them some extra time, but we now have the trial transcript paid for in full.
Excellent.
We have the trial transcript, but we don't have February 27th hearing and April 14th hearing, and that's not paid for as of yet. So that's what we're shooting for right now. We're moving to the next level within the next, within the next 35, 45 days or so. We should be inside the appeal court and requesting appeal bond at that time. So we're moving forward. We're doing the things that need to be done. And I'm more than happy to say to everybody out there, I want to thank them for everything they have done and contributed. And it's really been an honor to have so many people who are willing to say, yes, there's something wrong with this criminal justice system.
What can we do to help you right now? So we need more donations to come in. What else can we do? Let us know what we can do to help you.
Absolutely. What we need now, we need to take this thing to a whole different level. Like I said, we're still very much in need of the February 27th transcript and also the April 14th. Once we get
Reverend,
those, we'll have a
couple. Can you stay with us to the other side of the break? We're going to come right back.
I sure can.
This is Daniela Walls and Michael Chiotinas in Athens sitting in for Dr. Webster Tarpley, and we are lucky to have Reverend Edward Pinckney on the line. Reverend, continue where you were before the break.
Absolutely. So this is what we want people to do. We, like I said, the February 27th trial script, we need to purchase that. Also, the April the 14th trial script, we need to purchase that. So whatever people wanted to contribute, they're welcome to contribute and just take this thing to a whole different level, and we're prepared to take this thing to a whole different world. We still need the people. Also, June 3rd, we would have a protest of the Attorney Grievance Commission in Detroit, Michigan. Matter of fact, we're organizing the people now to make sure that they'll be there. They're going to be there. That's June 3rd. It's going to start around 10 a.m. So we want people to say we're going to be there all day on that day on June the 3rd, and we're going to be protesting the Attorney's Grievance Commission. And the reason why, they allow these prosecutors to get away with what they do, and they give them a free pass. They know that they're corrupt, but they say nothing about it. So we want to let them know that we know that they are corrupt, and we're going to move this thing to a whole different level. So I want people all over the world, and also I want them to call. You can call the Attorney Grievance Commission. You can reach them at 313-961-6585 and tell them that we want a complete and thorough investigation of the prosecutor, Michael Seppet, in Barron County, Michigan.
Post all that information and the number for the Attorney Grievance Commission on tarpley.net so people can find the number.
Absolutely. And make sure they understand how important it is for them to call, because they think that everybody is so intimidated by this court system. It's basically a criminal enterprise that they've been running anyway. So we have to make sure that they understand that we are not going to back down and we come to fight. Because there's never been a fight I didn't like. So I'm enjoying every minute of this. I might be here, have to eat this food. Listen to me. This food, Aramark. Those of you around there, make sure you understand who Aramark is. That what they have done, they have, as a matter of fact, 123 prisoners got food poisoning in Ionia. Another 79 in Jackson, Michigan, at the prison in Jackson. And here's this. And in Saginaw, they were serving prisoner food that they have thrown in the garbage. And nobody ever say anything about this. This stuff is almost ridiculous. Nobody will believe the way this prison system is run. And I just want to thank the people that allow me to be on the show from the prison system. Because they could stop it at any time, but they have decided that, you know, that the world needs to know, and how can you stop the freedom of speech? So that's the most important thing. And I'm excited, Danielle. I'm so excited to just to be on this show and to tell the world about what's happening inside this prison system. And here's another thing. We have to figure out a way how are we going to send some of these guys home. Some of these guys have been in prison for 50 years, 40 years, and nobody seems to care. So it's time that we take a stand and move this thing to a whole different level. The people have to step to the plate and say no more. Until you come step to the plate and say no more, it's going to continue just like this. So I'm here for a reason. It's no accident that I'm here. And God,
I absolutely agree with you about that. It's a barbaric, uncivilized system, and that's the wreckage of the barbaric, uncivilized system.
Oh, absolutely. And you wouldn't believe the healthcare system. At one time, they was talking about letting guys go home because it costs more to give them good health service than it would do to keep them and make money off of them. But then it came up, they pulled a rabbit out of the hat. Here, the state pays 100% of the healthcare. And then the federal government now pays 70%. So now is no reason to let these guys go. And I have discovered this just recently because they tried to get me. They got me, had me signing up for Medicaid. And I sent it back. I didn't want it. They told me I had to have it. They say, you have no say-so in this prison system, whether you like it or not. I tell you, Danielle, I'm excited. Yes, I'm excited, Danielle.
We're all steady around the world. I'm sorry if it seems like for the last couple of weeks I've been out of touch, but we are 100% with you to the end and beyond. So don't ever worry about that. We're building forces over here too.
Danielle, I'm not concerned about. And also, I want people to write me. They can go to bhbanco.org and get my address and write me letters and stuff like that, like they were doing. We want people from all over the world to be writing me. And then what I would do, I would write them back, let them know the conditions here, so they can spread the word also. They can put it on their website. They can do different things like that. But we have to show them what we're capable of doing. Until we're able to do this and get this word out, it's going to continue. There's no excuse for this country. This country is going to have 3 million people, 3 million people in this prison system by the year 2020. 3 million people. That's a lot of folks. That's more than China. That's more than Russia. That's more than both of them put together. But we
people
have to
want to make sure that you get the letters. They don't intercept
absolutely.
Them, do they? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Put that on the website, and you can reach me. I'm in Coldwater, Michigan. That's the name of the
I'll
person.
Put the address up on tarpley.net underneath this radio interview. So.
Yes.
With the Attorney Grievance Commission number to prosecute Mike Sepik for egregious handling the case, and that we still need donations, and we have filed the transcript, and we're beginning the appeal process. So that's where
absolutely.
We are.
Absolutely, and it's getting that transcript was extremely difficult, but we have it, and we're ready to move forward, and I'm expecting big things to happen. I'm expecting to expose a system that was built on corruption. It's also running a criminal enterprise. And this is the most important thing that happened. We get a chance to tell the world about this criminal justice system. Because I don't think we would ever have gotten a chance. Nobody would believe that the judge is corrupt. Nobody would believe that the prosecutor.
You have 1 minute remaining.
These things. But I'm telling you today, it's happening. But listen, Danielle, I only got about 60 seconds left. I just want everybody to know that don't forget the 3 most important things. Call that Attorney Grievance Commission and demand that Michael Sepik be put on trial and investigated for criminal activity. Number 2, those of you out there, we still need financing for the transcript for February 27th and April 14th. The trial transcript we do have, which was the big one. It's more than 2,000 pages, something like that. So we definitely got that. So I want everybody to make sure they understand how important it is, and I really appreciate everybody. Everybody, you've done a tremendous job, but let's not give up now. I'm close to that door, and you can get a chance to just pull me on out. So please do whatever you can to help, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, we love you and we miss you.
Hey, thank you so much. And tell them they can go to bhbanco.org. That's bhbanco.org. And
thank you for using Global Telling.
I'll finish what he was saying. You can go to bhbanco.org to make your donations. And it would be great if you could decide how much that you're comfortable spending each month and make it a monthly recurring donation as part of something you're doing to help this entire American problem. So thank you for that. And Michael, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Good. Well, were we talking about when we left off? Do you remember?
I just want to say that you can see how power relation in the economic field and government, how powers are intertwined, and how the prison population is being used as blackmail to keep people obedient to an economic system. I just wanted to say this. Also, how much time have we got left in the segment here?
I don't know. The sound engineer will alert us. That was well said about Reverend Pinckney. You were saying the listeners of Dr. Tarpley should know that if you want to distribute the pie more fairly, you have to bake the pie. We were talking about prevention. There's the break. We'll continue on the other side. You're listening to World Crisis Radio. This is Daniela Walls with Michael Chiotinas, sitting in for Dr. Tarpley. This is Daniela Walls, hosting with Michael Chiotinas from Athens, sitting in for Dr. Webster Tarpley. Before the break, we were talking about production and how there can't even be speculation if the production keeps grinding down to a halt. What good are derivatives? Are quadrillions of dollars in derivatives if there are no goods and services to purchase? What we need to be talking about is production, production, production. And let's look at what China is doing. They're acting like America in the 1860s. They have a tariff to protect their auto industry. They have fair prices to lift up their farmers. They have public banks and export credit. They have a massive commitment to public infrastructure. And what is the result? Predictably, a rise in the living standards and a rapid reduction in quote-unquote income inequality. China did not achieve this result by taxing the rich into oblivion, and they did it by offering workable public alternatives to the Western consensus. The pernicious thing about income inequality, when we hear it coming from Bernie Sanders and possibly next year from Hillary Clinton, she's starting with the rhetoric now, is that it offers the appearance of a willingness to address the problem. But the effect is to draw attention away from the problem, which is Wall Street. Wall Street. If you're not fighting bankers, you're spinning your wheels. Our economy is so financialized that the financial values, quote unquote, destroy the real values. Claim on value is greater than economic value itself. We get free trade and the short-term gains of a select few what pale in comparison to the loss of earned income, labor capability. And this leads into the big other big thing this week, the TPP.
Yes, Daniela. Yes. I saw the big news in America is that the Senate approved the TPP fast track. There was some back and forth where everybody was waiting in anticipation because it didn't look like it would pass. But I read this morning that it did. What is the state of the fast track bill now?
It passed the Senate. It has to pass the House, but it looks doubtful because reactionaries rule the House.
What is TPP and what's the point of it? What is behind this?
Yeah, you know, nobody knows ever. I've spent a lot of time analyzing this. I mean, the average person doesn't really understand it. Let's break this down. It's really important. See if we can get through it before the next segment. I'm going to try to go quickly because it's another hard thing to unravel. I think the point is that the TPP will create new free trade agreements with low-wage nations like Vietnam, Bangladesh, and Malaysia. The idea is to replace Chinese manufacturing and things like Indian textiles, the Indian textile industry. The big picture here is that people are saying this is going to take away more American jobs. The reality is that it probably won't change much in America, but it's very dark. It won't be good. We still have a $1 billion a day trade deficit, and this will not make it any better. All free trade agreements pull down American wages and suck our jobs overseas, and they are all bad. But the idea is that we already have free trade with many third world nations, right? And the American worker can never compete with the $2 a day salary anyplace. The big idea with the TPP, which is different than NAFTA, this is important to understand, is to prevent Vietnam and Malaysia especially from becoming de facto Chinese colonies. As Chinese working standards rise because of all these New Deal policies they're putting in place, and our standards go down because of all the New Deal policies we strip, the West wants to make sure that China is not building up Vietnam and then using Vietnam. Okay, let's take textiles for example. Most of the world's textiles are made in Bangladesh. America wants to make sure that China doesn't invest a bunch of money building up Bangladesh into their own textile colony or turning Malaysia into their computer electronics colony. Malaysia could easily come in and compete with South Korea and Japan, for example, who are in the American sphere of influence. The big picture on this is that it's an attack on the BRICS, B-R-I-C-S, BRICS, the BRICS Bank. Y'all know it. Replace China, Vietnam, and Bangladesh, Peru.
It's been discussed. It's been openly discussed for years. It's a China containment policy. I think Obama talked about the Asian pivot in these terms, that the U.S. was essentially going to colonize Asia by peeling nations like Malaysia, the Philippines, Vietnam, etc., away from China by offering them preferential treatment regarding trade.
Mm-hmm. The idea of containment is that we are taking away chess pieces from China to prevent their becoming a world power in the same way that we were in the early years of free trade.
It's a game of chess. Mm-hmm. Yes, so TPP isn't going to change much for you in the U.S. It's just that the BRICS nations are trying to be a rising tide. And Wall Street wants new coolie labor, you know, slave wage labor, to forestall any attempt by China to develop a strong electronics industry.
Exactly. Exactly. I think the two big winners will be Malaysian electronics and Vietnamese textiles. The BRICS want multipolarity. They want China to be able to develop neighbors. They want India to be able to develop its neighbors, whereas the West wants Western hegemony. Under the BRICS system or under the Chinese-Russian conception, it would be fine to have both Bangladesh and Vietnam or to have both Japan and Malaysia, basically to do things in multiple places. But under the Western system, they want a monopoly on all these industries in countries that are friendly to the Western consensus. The West want hegemony and BRICS wants multipolarity. Like, we cannot allow China to ascend, well, I can't, or we can, but we as the West cannot allow China to ascend in these ways and undercut our interests. Again, I want to stress that we are against all free trade agreements, but the people who are opposed to the TPP look at it as equal to just another NAFTA and might not see this dimension that the trade agreement has moved away from being an attack on America and is a direct Wall Street attack now on China.
That's great analysis, Daniela.
Oh, thank you. In other news, yours too. In other news, just as the TPP fast track hit, you have perpetual warmonger and neocon John McCain, right? He announced that as part of a $14 billion defense authorization bill, which was approved by the Senate Armed Services Committee, the U.S. just added funds for 12 more F-A-18 fighter jets. But more importantly, and the reason I'm bringing this up, is the bill authorizes sending more arms to Ukraine. So that's dangerous. And also, that's the end of the segment. We're coming back with Adam Rodriguez. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Daniela Walls with Michael Chiotinas, co-hosting, and we are standing in for Dr. Webster Tarpley, who is in Donetsk. And Michael and I have a lot to cover. We had, there's a lot of geopolitical news and domestic news, and we'll finish our conversation on this week's United Front Radio, where I host with my co-host Kyle McCarthy. So we will have that show up this week where we continue the discussion we had before. But yeah. Now we have to turn to the commissionership, the Pennsylvania commissionership race in District 10 it is, right, Matt?
It's the Congressional District 10, but it only encompasses Monroe County.
Just for Monroe County. Sorry that I call it District 10, but for commissionership for Monroe County. And we have Matt Brosman, and Matt has been the full-time representative from the UFAA Tax Wall Street Party, who's been helping Adam on the ground in PA. And this is the last show before the primary vote on May 19th. So we want to hear from Matt what it's like on the ground and to give us a list of things that we can do. These are the days to get active. We have enough information. What can we do this week to help Adam Rodriguez? And all we'll have all hands on deck. So let us know, Matt. Give us a rundown of what it's like there on the ground.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me on, Daniela, to talk about Adam's campaign in the waning days here. It's going pretty well. There was an article just published in the Pocono Record, which is the paper that covers the county, Monroe County, and they interviewed Adam as well as the other three candidates, and Adam's interview came out very well, although it is short. The feeling from the people involved heavily in the Democratic Party up there is good for us. They like Adam more than they like the opponents. Christie, the local real estate developer, and has ruffled many feathers up there over the years. And the other guy's name is Everett, and he's basically a Tea Partier in drag. None of the Democrats up there consider him a real Democrat. But then there's Andre Reams, who is running on the same slate as Adam. And we've been running with him, although they have been doing less things together recently and focusing on their own bases and their own ideas. But so it's going pretty well. Like you mentioned before, the election is May 19th, and I guess this airs on Saturday. So there's only a few days to go. So in terms of what people can do to help, the main thing we are looking for is a last-minute phone banking push. We will be using a list of super voters. I guess I should have stated that Adam is running as a Democrat in this primary, and two of the four can win. So all we need is second place. And to do this, to assure this is going to happen, the best we can do is to finish our phone banking operation, which we have started. So we are looking for volunteers, well-wishers, people of goodwill, to help us make a 50 to 100 calls. Maybe each, not all these calls will connect. It doesn't take that much time. A script has been written in these final days, especially on Monday. The primary is on a Tuesday, and also tomorrow. Well, I guess it would be today, Saturday.
If people want to volunteer for phone banking, should they send that email to the Tax Wall Street Party website or to your website? What email should they contact?
Sure. I would prefer if they actually called my direct cell phone number so we can turn it around really quickly. And I will give that out now. It's and I don't mind if this goes across. That doesn't bother me. It's 717-405-0631. Once again, that's 717-405-0631. They can also, if they they can message the Facebook of the UFAA. I check that rather frequently, or they can find me through the Facebook page of the UFAA. They'll find my Facebook there, and they can contact me like that.
When you say the Facebook of the UFAA, do you mean the United Front Against Austerity's Facebook or Adam's campaign Facebook?
Either one, but especially the United Front Against Austerity Facebook page. I have that set to alert when anything new pops up there.
Excellent, excellent. Okay. So, people can say, I want to volunteer the phone bank.
Go ahead.
No, but I was going to say, people can say, I want to volunteer at a phone bank. And if each of us come together and make 50 calls each and then call and recall, calls aren't just like, I made my calls. If you're a political organizer, you know that you call and you recall and you recall and you, until you engage people in a relationship. So that's what one organizer does. So continue, Matt.
Sure. And these are super voters you'll be calling. These are people who voted in 7 of the last 8 elections, including primaries. And this primary coming up on Tuesday is going to have a turnout of about 8% to 10%. This is the quality of our democracy in the country right now. So 8 to 10%. So the people you've been calling have voted in 4 elections with that low of turnout. So these are super voters. They'll vote no matter what. So it's very targeted. The list is good. I know I wanted to give a shout-out to some of the UFAA people who have already helped in this. Thank you very much for that. You guys have been very important in this campaign. What else people can do, if they don't have time for that, there's this article on the Pocono Record. You can go to their website, PoconoRecord.com, and just search for Adam's name. And this recent article pops up immediately. And commenting on this article might be a good idea for those who don't want to devote the time to the phone banking. It's a very simple thing. It will be seen. There's a few comments on it already. And we would hope people would do that if they have a moment to do so. I was actually, right after this call, going to do that myself.
Great. So we are going to have 3 days where I think it's all hands on deck and our job is to make calls. And this week is dedicated to Adam. From the time this show airs and you hear this until the 19th, come out and help Adam, because it's a smaller race where it's not, we don't need to call tens of thousands of people. We're talking a few thousand, and we can get through this together and charm them and tell them and engage them in a relationship.
Yes, and Adam's been doing this one-on-one, and he's been doing this extremely well.
Well, and, tell us about Adam, because you spend time with him. Of course he's doing it really well. Tell us about Adam and who he is as a guy.
Sure, that's a great idea. Okay, Adam, when I first got in contact with him, like, so, you know, tell me a bit of your story, what's going on, and I asked him if he had any children, and he said he had 5 children. So he's a guy with 5 children. He has a normal, honest job. He's a designer. He designs clothes. He'll design toys. He'll design logos. He went to a very good graphic design school. He's very smart and very educated. But he's just a normal guy. He drives a jalopy car, just like I do. You know, he struggles with money. He's got a kid in college. He's got 4 more on their way to college. And he's just a normal guy. And this kind of gets to the point that politics cannot be just something left to the oligarchs to do for fun and members of the rich leisure class to do as a plaything to occupy their time, like, you know, Carly Farina or Herman Cain in the past. It can't be something like that. We all have to mobilize. And even if we're middle class, lower middle class, it doesn't really matter. Everyone's got to get out there and do something. And Adam took that message, which the good doctor says very often, and he did it. And now he has a very good chance of winning this thing. He has a 50% chance as it stands now, and I would give it way more than that due to his work ethic and his ability to connect to people, because he is just a regular person. He drives on the same pothole-filled roads. To give another little thing of his, I know he doesn't talk about this himself. He's more focused on the issues. But
that's what we're all doing here, Matt, is that voter turnout is so low. Our whole generation is completely lost. They don't even know who their congressman is, much less their commissioner in their area. And politics is not a joke, because these oligarchs keep getting their people in. And at the end of the day, we're getting our people in. Thank you for being with us, Matt. That's the music. And thank you for your hard work. Welcome back to World Texas. Daniel Walls, sitting in for Dr. Webster Tarpley. I am here with Adam Rodriguez for Monroe County Commissioner. The vote for the primary vote is on May 19th. And we just had Matt Brosman, your campaign volunteer, telling us many things we need to do to help you. But from the time this show airs on the 19th, I want all UFAA and Tax Wall Street Party resources directed at Adam. The primary is May 19th. So, Adam, tell us everything you need from us.
Well, sure. Thank you very much, Danielle. And I wanted to, just say hello to your audience out there. And thanks for having me on again. Well, right now, we're pretty much at the end of the campaign here. But we have another three or four more days to go. They're going to be crucial in that I'm going to be pretty much hitting the ground, knocking on a lot of doors, going out and talking to people, working what we call our super voter list. And right now, we just released, or it landed yesterday, our mailer, and that went out to over 5,000 residents here throughout the county. I was fortunate enough to get the bulk mail rate from the county party, which saved us a lot of money. And also the mailer itself was fantastic. I had a local printer handle it, and I designed it, and obviously the printing came out fantastic. It was very glossy, very large, the kind of thing that you really can't miss if you're, going out to get your mail and bringing it in, because, a lot of people want to send it.
I must say they looked great. They looked absolutely great. I loved those flyers. Okay,
yeah,
keep going.
They came out fantastic. They really did, and, the glossy aspect of it really just pumped it up, because the other two candidates that were able to do mailers, and we weren't really sure who they went out to because it was very erratic in terms of who was receiving. And my words off of what we call the super voter list, and so that was over 5,000 doors. Basically, those other candidates, their mailers really, quite honestly, just didn't compare to ours. Ours was bigger, full color, with a picture of myself on the front and on the back, a nice picture of my family. It was, we really can't afford professional photographs, so we had something from one of our kids' graduation event at the local state college out here, East Stroudsburg University, where two of my daughters attended. And, it just had a real honest quality to it. And I had one of my good friends, Maureen Madden, she's helping me run my campaign. She ran for state rep. She actually helped me put this whole thing together. She helped me write it to make sure that it was concise and it was hitting all the points on the back. Obviously, running as a Democrat, whenever I try to address the issues that are really kind of important to me as a politician in regards to national banking, these are the things that really drive my desire to get into politics is, and understanding that history, it's difficult to be able to address those things in a very direct way in such a short manner. When you're doing a postcard, it is very confined in terms of how much people are going to read at any one time. So we didn't do bulleted points. We did a nice little concise reasons as to why I should be commissioner, giving a little background, my history in construction. I was a union contractor. Union construction work in the city, and that really helps to understand a lot of the building and infrastructure needs that we have out here. And then I also work for the Port Authority for 5 years, so I have a really good knowledge of basic maintenance for a very large bi-state agency. So understanding the maintenance needs from a municipal aspect is something that I have in my background. And that was one of the advantages that we had in having Maureen help us with this, is that she's ran several other campaigns before. She's worked for the Democratic Party for a long time, and understanding how to craft something that's going to really relate to the bulk of our voters out there, which are, people that are going to come out in the primary. Not every voter is going to come out, unfortunately. I think in the last municipal election, again, this is a county of 170,000 people with a little bit over 50,000 registered Democrats, and only 4,000 came out to vote in the last primary, 4,000 Democrats in the last primary.
It's incredible how many people have given up on politics.
Yeah, it really is sad. And you know what? Because no one's giving them a reason to. And so that was 4,000 voters that came out in the last primary, in the last municipal primary, rather. So that was 2011. And generally speaking, municipal elections, unfortunately, just do not draw a very heavy turnout. And, I think in the general, we'll probably get maybe,
I would say between 30 and 40,000 people to vote in the general election. But being that you know, we only have these 4,000 people that we know are going to come out and vote, that's where we focused our mailer. So it was extremely targeted, and we were fortunate enough as well to have a little bit of extra money to print out some palm cards, which we're going to hand out at the polling stations. I have people volunteering for me to come out and work the polling stations. I have people coming out and helping me putting up signs, lawn signs, at all the different polling stations throughout the county. There's over 50. So the night before the
excellent. So we were able to get our hands on some yard signs. So we were able to pull up.
Yeah,
it's great. You were going to be holding signs at the polling stations, big signs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, initially some people would float the idea of just taking some of, like, the mailer that we did and blowing it up real big and like, you know, putting on 11 by 17. And I was like, nah, you know what, we have a little bit of extra money here. So we were able to find a printer that was good enough to just really just put this on a rush basis. Within 3 days, we had the signs ready, screen printed on both sides, and they look fantastic. So it's really big. Adam Rodriguez for Monroe County Commissioner, and vote on. I'm number one on the ballot, so that's one of the things we're focusing on as part of my campaign. And that I'm at the top of the ballot.
Lottery to have your name number one on the ballot.
Yeah, I won the lottery. I basically came out first on that lottery draw, and traditionally that tends to add another 10 to maybe even 15% onto the vote. And in this particular election, that's going to work for me to the best of my advantage, because there's really no one name that stands out as far as this campaign goes. So it's kind of like six of one, half dozen of the other. You know, I mean, there's no one candidate that's going to kind of like be able to have that name recognition and walk away and say, oh, it's just a done deal for me. I think it's going to be a pretty close race. All I needed to do was to come into second, and basically, I'm elected. I'm in the general election.
You did everything right along the way. All of our hands are going to be on deck, phone banking for you for the next 3 days. Everything else is going to be put aside, and for all of the supporters of UFA and Tex Wall Street Party, far and wide. We have a couple hundred inter-party members now, and thousands of supporters. So, any of you thousands of supporters, you want to change world history? Get Adam on the ballot by phone banking.
There you go. And that's, you know, I don't think people should take that lightly. You know, obviously running as a Democrat, you know, the whole aspect of compromise with the Republicans is something that you always want to bring to the table. You know, you want to compromise when you have to. But I bring a different fight to this ball game. I'm not of the mind that, oh, well, we don't have the money. Where can we get the money? I don't tolerate that kind of thinking. Are you kidding me? You saw $40 trillion being bailed out to some of the world's biggest crooked banks, and you're sitting here telling me, where's the money? Don't worry about the money. Worry about where you're going to get the people to do these projects that we need to do in this area alone. Worry about getting the trained manpower and the skilled workforce to do the things we need to do to get back to a real kind of very highly productive New Deal type of economy here. And don't worry so much about the money. I know where the money is, and I'm going to fight for that. You just put together
that
the work.
That really resonated. That really hit me. The money is there, everybody. Adam knows how to get
course.
It. Adam, that's the music. It's the end of our show. I want to thank you and thank Michael for co-hosting with me.
Wow,
Dr. Harper will be back next week. You've been listening to World Crisis Radio. I'm Daniela Walls. Have a wonderful week.